Hello and welcome to Season 7, Episode 13 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, the 25th of June, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the #UUPCIRC channel. I'm Laura, and joining me this week are Mark.
Hello.
Alan.
Hello.
And Tony.
Good evening.
How are you doing?
Great.
Pretty good. We're all here again.
I know.
We are.
Is this some sort
of... We keep doing this until someone tells us to stop.
Well, I was just wondering if this was some sort of record, because, you know...
Oh, what, of us all being here at the same time?
Oh, this is episode 13, and we're... So...
Well, presumably that's going to continue for the rest of the season. I know I'm going to be here.
Yeah, me too.
And me.
Really?
I've organised my holiday around this show.
And me.
I've organised all of my family and my extended family to go on holiday around this show. How about you, Tony?
Okay.
Good to hear it. Glad you're committed as well.
So how many weeks have we got to learn how to set this up?
Not enough. An inadequate number of weeks. Right, there we go. Should we go on with the news?
Yes.
Yes. And now it's time for the news. And Amazon have released their first, they have announced their first smartphone, the Amazon Fire Phone.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's what the marketplace needs, isn't it?
And more phones.
And more.
Absolutely does. Needs more diversity.
Yes.
It's completely diverse, isn't it? It's completely different from anything else.
Well, it's running Fire OS, a brand new OS, which is nothing like you've ever seen before, except it's a fork of Android.
And I bet it's annoying for Firefox OS.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Never spotted that.
No.
I bet they have.
Dear. Okay, yeah.
So what's the unique selling point of this delightful device from Android?
So
Amazon. Seriously, there I go already.
So they have a few sort of unique Amazon-y features in there. There's Firefly, which
what is that?
Lets you take photos of things. Like identifying information on things like barcodes or product numbers, and it tells you about the product and presumably lets you buy them on Amazon.
Sony phone does that.
Yeah, so the Amazon app has done that for ages. Oh. But I guess this is built into the device because it's from Amazon.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know, maybe there's more stuff.
I know the Amazon app, I did this at least 2.5-3 years ago because one of my coworkers helped me with this. I showed him the Amazon app and showed him that you could take a photo of anything, not just a photo of a barcode, but actually you could just take a photo of anything.
Yeah.
And it was sent away to the Mechanical Turk or, you know, something somewhere that would come back with a shopping link that would let you buy the thing from Amazon or a close approximation of the thing you took a photo of. And I proved it worked by taking a photo of a mobile phone. It was a whatever Samsung Galaxy thing, and I just took a photo of this phone, and within a couple of minutes Amazon app bounced back to me and said, yeah, that's a Galaxy S phone. And I showed it to my coworker, and he hit the buy it now button on my phone.
Oh, brilliant.
So what's the other unique selling points?
It has a thing called Mayday, which is their free video support, which has all the slightly disturbing adverts of the guy...
With the Irish woman.
Yeah, the Irish woman.
Oh.
And
slightly awkward guy who appears to be having...
Slightly obsessed with her.
Yeah, slightly obsessed with her.
Someone pointed out to me recently that you never see that in an Apple advert. People... I mean, they talk about the Genius Bar and stuff, but in an Apple advert, they never say, our product is so broken, you have to ask for help. Whereas Amazon are saying there's so many problems with this that we've had to actually build in human support into the device.
You can't possibly work this out for yourself.
That is an interesting way of looking at it. I hadn't considered that.
And the irony is, my ordinary Kindle, I've never had any problems with.
Right. Chances are that you need it, probably quite slim. Well, chances that your grandparents might need it, maybe. Or your, you know. Yeah.
But advertising that you might need it.
It's a service I'm sure some people might use.
I mean, they must be assuming that most people aren't going to use it, because otherwise manning live video support for every possible user is going to be crazy.
It's full employment for the entire planet, surely.
The last sort of big headline feature is a thing called Dynamic Perspective, which is like 3D gestures to do with the
the gesture you're doing and the way you're holding the device does
different. Oh, they did a promo video without showing the device before the device was launched.
Oh yeah, and you couldn't see the device.
Yeah, and you saw people going, wow, that's amazing, and like tilting their heads, so you knew it was something like parallax or 3D or perspective based. Yeah. But you know, without actually seeing, you didn't know if it was like there were all these like speculation that it was projecting up. It was like they'd mastered holographic 3D from a phone. I was like, no, it just kind of moves a bit when you tilt the phone. That's yeah, all it does.
Like you can tilt it to scroll instead of flicking with your thumb.
Wasn't there the 3DS? The Nintendo 3DS was a bit 3D.
Yeah, but that's more. That's kind of, in inverted commas, proper 3D.
Right. So this isn't as good as that thing that came out
years ago.
No,
it's kind of more perspective, but it's more the gestury thing where you're holding reading a book and you just, you know, you've got your hands full, but you're holding the device and you don't want to swipe or anything. You just, because your fingers obscure the screen. So you just like tilt the phone away from you and it scrolls. So while you're reading, you can just like infinite read. Rather than, you know, that horrible page turny thing. Yeah. That's so last year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like one of those old games with the little ball in the
middle. Yeah, that's
if you tilt it too far, then you've got to try and like balance it out.
That's, I would imagine, nightmare. Many people do that. Like, let me turn the page. Oh, no, too far, and then tilt it back.
And I
can imagine myself doing that.
I flex right. my wrist every so often if I'm sat in the same position for a long time reading.
Mm.
That would be getting really annoying.
Well, this is good, because this allows you to flex your wrist while you're reading.
Good point. They think of everything.
Yeah, they do.
And turn the page at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you can you have a device to allow Amazon to harvest all of your data instead of Google. So yeah. there's a nice choice in the market.
Yes.
Presumably Google gets a bit, doesn't it?
No, because they're nothing to do with...
No, but they... Well...
Mm.
Oh, they must surely be licensing some technologies from Google and probably some from Microsoft
as
well.
Oh, okay, yes. No, in terms of just the whole general patent weirdness in the market, yes.
If only there was an alternative smartphone operating system that didn't tie you into either of those.
And it was ideally a kind of nice purpley colour. With a hint of orange.
Keep an eye out for that, listeners. Moving on. In inverted commas, social strategist working on behalf of Microsoft has been attempting to recruit bloggers to write about Internet Explorer in exchange for money. Fancy that. Michael Arrington, founder of TechCrunch, posted an email exchange between him and the agency in which he's invited to write about Internet Explorer's new features with reference to recent promotional websites such as Assassin's Creed Pirates Demo in return for financial compensation.
I really did enjoy his reply. That, you know, it's like a big email inviting him to be part of this exciting campaign and there's financial compensation available, and his reply was just... Is this for real?
Yeah, he's not the kind of guy you want to get on the wrong side of, I don't think.
And then I think they looked up who he was and apologised.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, it's called astroturfing, isn't it? Yes. In reference to attempt to create grassroots support for a product or cause, apparently.
Fake grassroots, so astroturf.
Were they targeting not the high-profile people? Obviously this guy was, but in general were they targeting bloggers?
They clearly had quite a lot of people on their list, but I think they hadn't curated the list quite well enough, and there were other like technology experts in other competing products, like people who are evangelists for Mozilla, who you know, Firefox and their phone, both competing products for Internet Explorer. They didn't really think this through. I mean, I can see why they do it, because it's very hard for Microsoft to shake that reputation that Internet Explorer has, and I can see why they would want to go out and get people to evangelize about how good the product is, because it may well be better, right?
Yeah, but, than it used to be.
But there's ways of doing it, and that seems to be a brilliant way.
I know there are a number of, as you may or may not know, I do wedding photography, Alan. I don't know if you've picked up on that from previous episodes.
No.
There are wedding blogs, and some of those have promoted posts, effectively, where they're writing about a product or a service or a vendor.
Oh, yeah.
But they usually sort of state this is a sponsored post or something like that. So it's clear that it is, whilst it's a real opinion, it is somebody's paid for it or encouraged that post to be there.
Yeah, I get that.
And that's fair. That's open, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, well...
You know, sort of this seems a bit more surreptitious, a bit more subversive.
It's
presumably
like,
they're not encouraging people to say this was paid for by Microsoft.
It's like when you get celebrities tweeting about some product because they're being paid to tweet about it, and it's not clear that they're being paid and it's not just their opinion.
Right. And actually, it's interesting. I saw a popular post on Reddit today by a guy who was writing a guide to how he got lots of money on his crowdfunding campaign. Mm. He was doing these sunglasses, and he did a Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign and got lots of money. And he wrote up how I got my success. And one of the things was pay popular people on Twitter to mention your product. It's as simple as that, you know. The question is, how do you find who's a popular person? There's apparently a website called followerwonk.com.
Oh, there is, yeah.
I've never seen this before. Yeah. It just made me chuckle. Anything with the word wonk in it is great. So anyway, the bloggers taking part in the scheme were invited to share their posts using the hashtag #IEBloggers, which was quickly hijacked by people lampooning the practice. They never learn. You just can't appropriate a hashtag like that. People are going to abuse it. And apparently Microsoft responded by saying, this action by a vendor is not representative of the way Microsoft works with bloggers or other members of the media. The program has been suspended.
I.e., we paid someone else to do our dirty work.
Yes.
And we got found out,
so we'll stop that. Brilliant.
Do they know anything about the gap in the Watergate tapes either? Yeah. So next up, one of TrueCrypt's anonymous original developers has said that a fork of the existing code base would be impossible and not a good idea. So TrueCrypt is an encryption software that the developers a few weeks ago said, don't use this software anymore. We're not going to tell you why.
Pretty much.
Yes. It was all sort of a bit abandoned and people were conspiracy theories abounding about, is the NSA compromised it? Is it all fundamentally flawed? Who are the anonymous developers originally? Are they all big agencies for US government agencies, that sort of thing? The developer was contacted by Matt Green, who's leading the audit of TrueCrypt's code base. An alternative course of action was proposed by the developer, which was to use TrueCrypt's code base as a reference for the relevant techniques and then for a complete rewrite to be produced. Hooray, yes.
He said that was something that they'd wanted to do anyway.
Yeah,
but that he's got no objection to them using it as a sort of how-to for the techniques, which he still thinks are valid, apparently.
It's all very murky, isn't it?
It is all a bit odd. Mm.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because people are quite prepared to accept this product by anonymous developers and to use it and trust it in corporate as well as personal circumstances.
Yeah,
and it only takes some rumours, effectively, and a couple of statements.
Well, and the actual developer himself monkeying with the website and screwing up all the code.
Well, somebody did.
Well, yeah, but as I understand it, Matt Green had contact with the developer in the past, and so this was the same person that he's contacted in the past as well. You know,
the same anonymous email address he'd contacted in the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
GPG signed, of course. Mm. Yeah, but it's kind of interesting how you can shake confidence in a piece of security software like that and how much of it is sort of smoke and mirrors and faith in the developers and faith in the software itself.
You just have to mutter, doesn't he look tired?
Excellent.
Okay, what's up next?
It is... Everything's gone quiet. A bit weird. So Opera 24 is now based on Chromium's Blink engine, and it's been released via the project's developer stream.
For Linux?
Yes.
Specifically.
Oh, yes. That wasn't in there, was it? Yes.
Yeah.
So you can now get the... It's been around sort of in development for a while, but this is the first time it's been available for Linux.
The previous version for Linux was, 12 or something? Oh. This is the first build since then, I think.
Right, okay.
And, doesn't work here. Seg faults on startup.
Works for me.
Yes. I did file a bug. I was a good boy. I filed a bug upstream at the developer's website. But, apparently, some people rave about Opera. There's almost like a religious devotion to Opera over the years.
A friend of the show, Stuart Langridge, was very impressed with this new Opera release on Twitter, I saw.
Yeah. And fair enough, if it's your favourite piece of software, then it's great that they've released another version.
The thing is, it feels really fast when you're using it, but I can't shake the feeling that the reason it feels really fast is because the spinner on the tab goes quicker than it does on Firefox.
Brilliant. Brilliant. We should do that in Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Yes. So what new features are in this Opera browser?
I don't know, but I was just about to say that because it's not on its own engine anymore, it should be easier to develop for.
It should be more compatible. Websites should just work in it as well. Yeah.
Do you think our big clock will work in it?
We'll have to ask Stuart. Actually, didn't you try it
Yeah, it didn't work.
that was Opera Mini on Android, though, so okay. That's probably not a fair comparison. That's what you link.
File a bug.
So it's got a feature called Discover.
Yes.
And this directs you to sites and articles based on your location and specified categories. I don't like the sound of that.
So it's just, you basically say, I'm interested in these sort of sites, and it sees where you are and tries to give you sort of local relevant sites.
So if I said, I want to look for hotels, and it finds ones that are nearby rather than, like, booking.com New Zealand or something.
I think it's more like you just tell it your general interests and it will give you stuff that comes up that's relevant to your interests.
rather than you saying,
you know, okay, Google, give me a thing.
You should put that behavior in the dash anyway, because it's a lot, you know, it's a lot faster.
Oh, here we go.
Anyway, Tony's gaming news.
Well, I don't think we've got much time left for the gaming
news. It's a short gaming news.
Well, is it that short? Is it short?
I can see one sentence. Read it.
Well, Alan, it's a complex story. Once you say the headline, you have to start to get into the actual meat of the subject.
And right.
I don't want to...
Have you scrolled down far enough to get to it now?
Yeah, I know exactly what the story is. And that's Zucum, who have released Enemy Unknown, which is now available.
Have they?
Yeah, and it's now available, get this, everybody, on Linux.
What's Enemy Unknown?
No, I think you need to call it the full title, which is Zucum, Enemy
Unknown.
And you can help, it's about alien invasions.
Oh.
So, you know, since its inception, the Zucum project has scoured the globe in search of the best and brightest military and scientific personnel to defend Earth from the alien invasion. I think this is a quote. Today marks the availability of a new technology that will enable even more world-class recruits to join the fight as Zucum Enemy Unknown is released for Linux.
Wow.
Zucum Enemy Unknown is a Steam Play title that runs on Ubuntu 14.04 and Valve Steam OS. The base game and all the add-on content, including the explosive expansion pack Zucum Enemy Within, with which you will all be familiar, are now available from Steam.
Is there someone you should be crediting with that opinion?
This is a press release from.
this was written by what's his name? What's his name, Tony?
The game or the press
release?
Yeah,
no, the game. The game. It's made by that famous developer. What's his name?
Well, I'd surprise you can't remember.
It begins with a J, I can't remember.
Yeah, well, we're really out of time.
Jim.
Oh, dear. Never mind.
Anyway, I guess that's the end of
the news. Well, it's exciting, yes. Thank you.
And now for some community news.
And events.
And events.
Event.
Event. So GNOME developers Robert Ansell and Ryan Lorty have been working on Mir support for GTK+.
Yes.
Ooh,
what does this mean?
GNOME apps will run on Unity 8 and Mir, does it?
Well... So, yeah, the whole brouhaha about Mir was that, oh, no, it's a display server that nobody else is going to support and no apps will run on it and all my legacy apps won't be able to work anymore. And so what this is a stepping stone towards allowing you to run other apps that weren't necessarily designed to run on Mir on Mir.
Cool.
And so those ones that are built using GTK, so that's like GNOME apps.
Yeah, so basically most of the standard desktop apps currently in the desktop Ubuntu image.
Yeah, could potentially run on Mir. I mean, it's not complete, and there's certain bits missing. And in the blog post, Robert goes through some of the things. I think you can only have a single window, and there's some other limitations. But it shows that you know they're working on it, and you know I think. That support will improve over time. So it won't just be Qt apps, it'll be GTK and potentially other toolkits as well.
Cool.
That can work on Mir, which is good news, right. I think.
Yes. How much work is required to get it to the same standard as native X GTK?
I have no idea.
I'm guessing it's probably quite a lot.
Yeah, I imagine there is a fair amount of work to do over the next year or so before we hit an LTS release where... maybe X isn't installed. Maybe.
So is this work being paid for by somebody with a vested interest in Mir?
Us.
Right.
Robert works for Canonical.
Right.
I think Ryan does as well, actually. Okay. So, yeah, they're they're Canonical guys, and Robert works on Mir and the display server stack, so right. You know, it's his department. And I know Ollie Reese, who is his boss, or his boss's boss, has been answering like Q&A stuff about Mir and putting out, you know, updates on the various mailing lists on Tinternet about this. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled. And
is this stuff being sort of pushed upstream into the GTK toolkit?
I don't know whether it's something they would accept or
yes,
not.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I know there's been some abrasive comments in the past about other upstream developers not accepting anything that supports specifically Mir.
Yeah.
And I know the Kwin maintainer has said that in the past. But, you know, we'll have to see. I'm sure they will attempt to upstream anything that is appropriate to be upstreamed. You know, I'm sure there's some bits of this that are in Mir and some bits of it that are in GTK.
Yeah.
And those bits that could be upstreamed, I'm sure they will do the right thing and try and upstream them. It will make no sense not to. But if those patches are rejected for whatever reason, then we'll have to carry them, unfortunately, in Ubuntu. Hey-ho.
Mm. Next up, Ubuntu 14.10 Alpha 1 is due out this Thursday.
Or last Thursday,
was it?
Yes.
Okay, then. It's out now.
Specifically on Wednesday, the 26th of June.
Isn't that today?
Today.
As we record.
No, yes.
25th today.
So Thursday, the 26th of June.
So tomorrow.
Yes.
So
or last week.
Or today.
Or sometime in the past.
It's only last week if you haven't listened to this episode when it was released and you're listening late.
Yes.
Okay,
well.
I'm glad we cleared that up. Alan, so, what's next?
Or what's in it?
So, yeah, it's the usual Alpha 1 in the cycle. So everything's frozen in the archive while everyone's testing this image.
When's 14.04.1 due?
Oh,
after 14.10 releases.
Really?
I think so, yeah. Usually the 0.1 is after, because it includes backported stuff that is in the next release. The first one is usually then.
Okay.
Are you waiting for an LTS to tell you to? Yeah, I've got that on my HTPC as well. I'm waiting.
So the other thing that's interesting about this is, I think we mentioned this previously, that we're now making an ISO image which has Unity 8 and Mir on it. So it's stripped down and doesn't have Unity 7 and all the other stuff the normal desktop image has. It's you know, for people to try out. But it has, Unity 8, the new Unity on it, so people can try that out if they want to.
Cool.
I feel so retro on 12.04.
You're on 12.04 still?
Yeah.
Wow.
LTS.
Why don't you upgrade?
Because I'm only doing LTSs and it doesn't give me a button.
Right. So, normally we don't pop up the prompt that says until the 0.1.
Yeah.
And I'm just checking the release schedule, actually, just to tell you exactly when the date is, because I'm nice like that, and I was trying to hold you off for that.
Oh, dear.
I have no idea when it is, then.
Oh, okay.
No idea.
12.04 it is?
Yeah.
Mm. So. Cool.
Interesting.
And finally?
It's kind of an event, but it's a community news thing. Next week, don't start this again. So the week of the 30th of June through till the 4th of July, we're having a Core Apps Hack Days. And we've done these a number of times in the last few months. The idea is that we have a bunch of apps that are community developed that are for the phone. So, for example, the calendar, the clock, weather, music, RSS reader, file manager, terminal, and we have some bugs still in them and some work to do before release, and we wanted to have a bunch of hack days to plow through some of those bugs and do a bit of testing and get people trying out the apps and seeing if there are any bugs in them and filing them and triaging in them, getting the stuff fixed. And so we're doing that next week. But the thing we're doing differently is all the previous hack days, we've only focused on the core apps. What we're doing this time is we've said to people, bring along your own app as well. So if you've developed an app for Ubuntu phone and it's not quite finished yet, you can bring it along and maybe get other people to help you finish it, or get advice from people who work on the platform, or mentoring from people who've also developed apps, that kind of thing. So, yeah, contact me on IRC if you want to get included in that, or just turn up next week to #ubuntu-app-devel on IRC.
What sort of skills do you need to get involved?
Actually, it's a brilliant question, Tony. So, you know, if you're a QML developer, then great, you've been kickstarted. We also have some parts of the apps that are written in C++. So the file manager, the terminal, and reminders app all have some C++ components with the QML doing the front end. So if you know C++ or QML, great. But the good thing is, if you don't know those, you can still get involved as well, because we have everything needed to jumpstart installing the SDK and getting started with all the tools.
And because QML is really easy.
It is really easy. We've got tutorials to get people going. We've got API documentation, all that kind of stuff. And if you just turn up and say you want to help, we'll point you in the right direction. And we have had people who've turned up at previous hack days who've then got on to help maintain some of the core apps. So it's been worthwhile, and the core apps developers tell us they really like the idea of the hack days because it allows them to focus attention and bring new people in. And yeah, it's really good fun.
Cool.
Excellent. Well, and further to extend the idea of me talking about things that I don't know about, we're going to talk about OgCamp.
Tell us about OgCamp, Tony. I know that you've had a lot of involvement this year.
OgCamp is a free software unconference, it says here. free culture unconference, I stand corrected. Yes. Which is taking place this year on the 4th and 5th of October at the Oxford Hotel in Oxford in the United Kingdom. You can get tickets and find out more information about OgCamp, how it works and who goes along and what sort of things happen there at ogcamp.org. The tickets are free, or you can choose to donate whatever you want to help the running of the conference. It's run by community. Nobody's making any money out of it. It's not a commercial operation. People just chip in and volunteer their time. There's a nice history page on the ogcamp.org website, which says about the how it was all founded and how it all got started, and the sort of things that have happened at previous events. If you'd like to help out with organising the event, get in touch. How does one do that, Mark?
That's a good question. We don't actually have a... you can tweet at OgCamp on Twitter. Or if you're interested in sponsoring, if you go to the website, my email address is there, and you can get in touch with me about that. Or if you want to get involved with the crew, you can contact Les Pounder on Twitter. He's Big Les P.
Yep. And we have some sponsors.
We do have some sponsors.
This is new information, so yes. Pin back your lugger holes.
So the we had our first confirmed sponsor, and our first gold sponsor is Ubuntu again.
Yay!
So we've had some money given to us from the Ubuntu Community Fund to help run the event, which is excellent. It's the second year in a row that Ubuntu have supported us, and this money comes from donations from the Ubuntu community.
Yes, it's great.
Proper community-funded event. Community-funded.
Yeah. Speaking of which, our second sponsor and our first silver sponsor is the OgCamp community themselves. So Tony mentioned that you can chip in when you pay for a ticket, and enough people have now done that, they've sort of earned themselves a silver sponsorship. So
I think that's brilliant.
That's definitely worth a mention. Yeah. So the whole thing, with those two sponsors, we now have enough money to actually do the event with the money we had left over from last year, just from community money. So that's really amazing.
Brilliant. So
you
don't want any more?
No.
Okay, right.
That means to have the event.
That means that the event can happen. That means that we've got the venue and the equipment. It doesn't mean that we've got a party. It doesn't mean we've got things to give away. It doesn't. Yes,
beanbags. Space invaders machines.
No space invaders machines yet. So
sweet.
If you would like to sponsor us, or if you think your company might want to sponsor us, then please do get in touch. We have various levels at which you can sponsor us and various things that you get as a result, one of which is being plugged on this show for the next 3 months, so you can't go wrong there.
Excellent.
So are you going to plug Ubuntu for the next 3 months?
On this show, what?
Hey? We normally don't talk about it at all. But yeah, okay, so ogcamp.org to get your tickets, and you can come along and have a great time.
See you there.
Yes.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that enthralls, exasperates, or elevates you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message. Just to know there's someone out there who cares.
that's it for episode 13. We'll be back next week when we'll be talking about some cool technology.
Vague status.
Yeah. We'd sure like to keep that? Them guessing.
Yeah, of course. Leave them wanting more.
Yes. We've also got a command line love, I think.
We've got double bubble command line love.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get double the downloads.
It's really good.
And some feedback as well from listeners.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it'll be good. If you're listening live, don't go away. But if you're not, thanks very much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.